So, the excerpt we just listened to is an excerpt from a very famous cartoon that you might recognize, Little Mermaid. And this particular one is a moment more in the first half of the movie. And I'm going to explain what the lyrics are, because I find it important, and actually the whole setting and the situation where these lyrics are being sung. So it says, Baluga, Saruga, come winds of the Caspian Sea, larynxes, glossitis, and max laryngitis, la voce to me. So Baluga, Saruga is basically two different kinds of salmon to eat. Well, or that live in the sea. Come winds of the Caspian Sea, so summoning the natural forces. Larynxes is the plural of larynx, the voice box. Glossitis is an inflammation of the tongue. Max laryngitis, a severe inflammation of the larynx. La voce to me, the voice to me. So, this is the moment where Little Mermaid, Ariel, who lives underwater under the rule of her father Triton. So the story of the movie goes like this, that she falls in love with a human, a prince called Eric, and her father doesn't want to hear about it. He prohibits her to talk further or discuss, and she looks for a solution and is at the same time lured into one, into a solution that is offered by someone who doesn't agree with the ruling system or his throne, and lives at the edge of the sea. And it's the big evil octopus named Ursula. So Ursula offers a deal to Ariel that she will give her a pair of legs for an exchange for her voice. So in this, Baluga, Saruga, come winds of the Caspian Sea, larynxes, glossitis, and max laryngitis, la voce to me. She's actually casting a spell onto Little Mermaid, summoning the forces to help her realize the spell and getting the voice. Now, why is this moment so important to me, or for my research in particular? At least for four, maybe five different reasons. I will see, I will try to count them. One is, the first one, very important one, is what is the value of the voice or the status of the voice? So what is Ursula going to do with the voice of Ariel? What can she do? She uses it somehow in the continuation of the cartoon, but I will not give away, I will not spoil it for you in case you haven't watched it yet. So I'm interested in what's in the voice, why is it important in the function of self-expression or its power of conviction, of seduction, its agency, and the fact that it's a female voice in particular. And in connection to that, why would she not use her voice anymore? How we listen to, well, certain groups in society, who has the voice, who hasn't, who is encouraged to use their voice, how, and so on. The second element is that when Ariel comes to land, she needs to be introduced to human culture. She needs to be taught how to use a fork, how to behave. And being in this role of a student, I find it very interesting that she doesn't need a voice. She only needs a body language, as Ursula is suggesting also sometimes later, saying that that will save the day or get her the man. So as a student, she is mute. She cannot respond. The third very important or very curious thing is that after Ursula is casting the spell, Beluga Saruga come winds of the Caspian Sea, larynxes, glossitis, and max laryngitis, la voce to me, and she says then, now sing. And to that, Ariel, well, doesn't answer, but gives the voice, and she goes, well, maybe a bit higher. So it's a very specific way of handing over the voice or releasing the voice. So Ariel doesn't go, so she doesn't vomit the voice out, she sings it out. I'm of course exaggerating, but the voice is elegant, the voice is smooth, the voice is angelic-like. Actually, it's sanitized, and that's something that I'm interested in how voices are sanitized for which particular context. Now, the next point, I believe it's the fourth one, is in this particular moment of handing over the voice in an exchange for a pair of legs, and just what happens just before that is that Ursula makes Ariel sign the contract. So she has to sign the contract, what she will give in exchange for whatever she will get. And I find this fascinating that, okay, first of all, they're in the underworld, but they're literate. So they write down things, what are the consequences. It's not just an oral agreement. And this interests me in reference to what Anne Carson writes in her book, Eros the Bittersweet. She's talking there about the transition of a culture in that particular book about Greek culture, going from oral to literate. This transition, and she's talking about reorientation of perceptual abilities that begin to take place. Why? How? So, reading and writing require focusing the mental attention upon a text by means of visual sense. And so it means closing and inhibiting the input of one's senses, of the writer, of the reader. So before, people would live in this space of continuity or continuous exchange or flux of information between, let's call it, inside and outside. So what I receive from the environment, the information, and what I also send out. And with the advance or the transition to reading and writing, I start to train my energy and thought upon the written word. So I need to, as a writer, resist the environment outside by distinguishing and controlling the one of inside. So I use effort, self-control, becoming aware of the interior self as an entity that is separable from the environment and its inputs. So it's not only that I'm capable of controlling this transition between inside and outside and developing an inside, but it's also necessary. in order to keep or prevent the disintegration of the thought of whatever it is that I'm committing myself to in the paper. And so literate training basically encourages a heightened awareness of personal physical boundaries and the sense of those boundaries as the vessel of one's self. And to control the boundaries actually means to possess oneself. And that not only reorients perceptual abilities, which anyway happens, but Anne Carson develops this idea in how we start conceiving our own body differently, how a notion of eros develops. And in relation to the excerpt that we just heard, how I connect to it is that this transition is comparable to Ariel leaving her habitat and going to be introduced to land. And so she goes from water, sea creature, to land, which means she's gonna change her perceptual system, reorient it, assembled it anew, and also start perceiving and acting in the world from a different sense of self. And in that regard, I'm really interested in how a voice is strengthening or is a kind of a residue, or I'm interested in how the change, the transition between oral to written affected not only the use of voice, of course, but how we think of the voice, how we use it as a tool, and especially the inner voice as something that is now controlling the self, and how it responds with the actual audible voice. In relation to that, I would like to also mention, for instance, the example of how we think with technology, or how it influences us. The fact that nowadays we have generations that are being introduced to literacy completely through digital means. So kids learn to write, they learn to type maybe, and not even write. I'm not sure, I'm guessing that this is possible, or they rarely really write. I wonder what happens to signature. Anyway, so I'm very curious how, if I try to accompany my movement of writing with my inner voice, how this changes my musicality and metrics if I do the same while typing it. So how these two simple activities, which are both writing, but one is done by typing and the other one is done by writing with a pen, how through the inner voice of articulating a thought, not that we all the time hear it, but in the case we do, how this reveals certain characteristics that inform our perceptual, our sensual system, and based on that, how we perceive ourselves, especially the notion of self.
Oh,